The Vintage Gamer, Episode 11, Barbarian Prince.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, a podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. The Vintage Gamer is a podcast available via RSS or direct download at www.thevintagegamer.net. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. Well, it's good to be back from GDC, finally. After a week of recovery, I pretty much adjusted to the time change, and then daylight savings time hit. So, here I am after a few weeks, and I think I may finally be in the correct time zone now. This is Pacific time, right? No, wait, Mountain. Anyway, speaking of GDC, I was kind of wondering what people thought of the GDC reports. I didn't get any feedback on it, so I don't know if it was a good idea or a bad one. Actually, most surprised at the lack of comments on the massively multiplayer board game. It kind of seems like something that'd be fun to run at a gaming convention, and I don't know, have some interest to the board gaming listeners out there. Anyway, if you have thoughts on any part of the GDC reports, let me know, either via the comments or just drop me an email or something. You can reach me at vintagejim@gmail.com. There is one thing I did forget to mention in those reports. While I was at an AI dinner, just basically a gathering of AI programmers in the industry, I kind of crashed it. I actually met a researcher from Sweden who, with his students, worked on a diplomacy AI where the calculations were distributed among the pieces, assuming that I understood his algorithm correctly. I think I did manage to track down a related thesis, if not exactly the one he was talking about. In any case, I'll put that link in the show notes for people who are interested. The one irritating fact that I noted is that they used JDIP for their basic application instead of RealPolitik. Ah well. Anyway, the one place where I did get a lot of feedback recently is regarding coverage of Rare games. I'll cover that a bit at the end during the feedback section. There have also been a few updates to the site during my hiatus. I finally have a logo. Actually, the logo's been up as part of iTunes and on BoardGameGeek for a while, but I finally put it at the top of the site. I've also dropped in a few more links on the sidebar there, and I've added some plugins for combating comment spam. On that last point, if you have any trouble getting through, please drop me an email. Again, that address is vintagejim@gmail.com. And I have a promo. You can check it out in the feed. So if you're a podcaster and a pleased listener, I would greatly appreciate it if you could play it during your show. Speaking of podcasters, there is a potential for a podcasting track at DragonCon, which is in Atlanta in the fall. Looks like we've got enough ideas for content, and we're just waiting for acceptance from the main people running DragonCon. So, if you'll be there at DragonCon, and you're interested in joining a gaming podcast panel, or you have other podcasting panel ideas, let me know. Good seats are still available. Finally, for those two of you out there who don't know already, because this has been announced on BoardGameGeek and on BoardGameNews.com, there is going to be a reprint of the classic German election game Die Macher. And yes, they will be using the cube Mado to represent genetic engineering. You can get more information on this at www.valleygames.ca. And I have ordered a copy of this, and I'll be doing a review of it at some point. And that's about all the news and announcements, so after a brief break, we'll get to the game.
Grasshopper, you have learned much in your training. However, to achieve ultimate geekness, you must pass one final test. You must snatch this chip from my hand, Grasshopper. I wasn't looking. You must snatch this chip from my hand. Once again, you must snatch this chip from my hand. You must snatch this chip. Enough!
Learn to be a true master. visit geekfooactiongrip.com.
Welcome back. As mentioned, our game this week is Barbarian Prince, designed by Arnold Hendrick and published in 1981 as another of the games in the Dwarf Star line. If you recall, the second episode of this show covered Demon Lord and summarized the rest of the games in the series. However, unlike most of the other games, which are basically war games with fantasy or science fiction themes, Barbarian Prince is a solitaire, paragraph-based game. You play alone and try to beat the game rather than other players. Now, paragraph-based games are a subgenre that first appeared and thrived, really, in the early 80s, although there was at least one that appeared in the late 90s. They are named for their most notable feature, which is a big book of descriptive text, and this can either consist of a preset plot or a complex set of random lookup tables. The best-known example of the first kind is probably Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, and Barbarian Prince is an example of the second type. Both kind of invoke the old choose-your-own-adventure books, but usually there's a lot more room for choice and strategy than those old adventure books. I was inspired to check out this game because of a comment from a listener, Jimmy Anderson. It was on my list to look out for, but his comments actually accelerated this. He wrote, "The primary reason I'm writing you is to tell you thank you for featuring the Dwarf Star game site on a show. I didn't have the pleasure of playing these when they were new, but enjoyed browsing and really enjoyed downloading and playing Barbarian Prince. I've played four quick games before realizing you can run away from combat. Since then, I've lost two more games, but not from combat." And he puts a smiley face there. Well, after getting that email, I thought, okay, I'll give this one a shot. So I downloaded the files, pulled together some extra components, and tried it out. The plot of Barbarian Prince is as old as the hills of Elsinore. Does Elsinore have hills? Anyway, your father, the rightful king, is dead, and you start out being hunted by his usurpers. You have 10 weeks, or in game terms, 70 turns, to explore the southern kingdoms and acquire 500 gold, which will allow you to raise an army to reconquer the northern kingdom. Otherwise, you fail, and your rightful kingdom is lost forever. Along the way, you can get followers that will help you in your adventures. Now, they're a fickle lot, leaving you if you don't feed and house them, for example. But they can help you in combat, which can and is very, very useful. The components are pretty simple. There's a terrain-covered hex board, which controls your travel, and a lead miniature that represents your location on the board. There are 2 six-sided dice for managing randomness, and a couple of books that contain the base rules and the random event tables. You start out in 1 of 6 random locations to the north of the board, or you can think of those as the southern reaches of your kingdom. On your turn, which, as I sort of indicated, represents a single day, you can do 1 of 8 things depending on your location. In any hex, you can do 1 of 3 things. You can travel to a new hex, which you'll probably do most of the time. You can rest, which you'll be doing most of the rest of the time. It allows you to recover from combat. Or you can search for a previously placed cache of food or items. Now, in specific hexes, hexes of certain terrain types, like villages and temples, you can do 1 of 5 things, again, depending on the hex type. You can seek news and information in a town, castle, or temple. You can seek to hire followers in a town or castle. You can seek an audience with a local lord in a town, castle, or temple. You can submit an offering at a temple. In this case, you're going to need some gold. Or you can search in a ruins. So, as I said, you do have a fair number of choices at your disposal. Much more than, do you run down the hall or stand your ground? All right, I choose stand your ground. Alrighty, the guards kill you. Okay, I'll choose run down the hall. Sorry, you fall in the pit and starve to death. Try again? Yeah, so it's a little more than your standard choose your own adventure. Now, in theory, you can just start with that first location and proceed. The rules do a good job of leading you through the game, but I found that actually knowing how the game flows helped me get through it a little easier. I struggled a fair bit through that first turn, so a little overview might be helpful. I'm just going to cover a few of the possible things you can do in a turn, the ones you're going to do most of the time. So the first one, the main one, is travel. And this is fairly simple, although it does take a little getting used to. So to travel to another hex, first you roll one die to see if you get lost. If you do get lost, which is pretty rare in most terrain, you stay where you are. Otherwise, you move your piece to the new hex. Then, in both cases, you roll for a random encounter on your current terrain. And that's pretty much it. Now, there are a couple of exceptions. If you're traveling by road or on a raft down the river, then you can never get lost. You don't have to make that roll then. But instead, you need to roll a road or raft encounter, which there are different sets of those. Now, if you're crossing the river, just going from one side to the other, it gets a little trickier. I'm not going to go into all the details, but suffice it to say that it might take you a few tries to get across. When you're traveling, and if you do get an encounter, then you do a few more rolls that will lead you to an event in the event book. These events are things like, you meet an elf, you find a secret village, or you are hunted by a ravenous pack of wolves. In each event, you often have some choices how to respond to that. So, for example, when meeting the elf, you can choose to talk, attack, or evade, basically hide. And how you choose will lead to other events which will resolve the encounter. So, for example, if you choose to talk, the elf can choose to become a follower and join your party. Or the elf can choose to become insulted and attack you, in which case you're led to a combat event. Now, combat is a little odd, but I think it works. One die roll gives you both whether you hit and how much damage it's done, so it's very compact in that way. Each character has a combat skill. The main character, you, the Barbarian Prince, starts out with a combat skill of 8, for example. So, to determine if you've hit someone, you subtract their combat skill from yours, then add that result to the roll of 2 dice. You then look up that modified result in a table that tells you whether you hit and how much damage you did. This damage is subtracted from the opponent's endurance. If that endurance gets to 1, they're unconscious, and if it gets to 0, they're dead. And there are some additional modifiers to the die roll depending on whether you or your opponent is injured and how much injury you have, but otherwise, that's pretty much combat right there. So, for example, suppose your combat skill is 8, i.e. you're the Barbarian Prince, and your endurance is 9, and you're up against a mercenary with a combat skill of 5 and an endurance of 4. Subtracting his combat skill from yours, you get a +3 to your roll. You roll a 7, which gives you a final result of 10. And looking that up in the combat result table, you see that it does 2 points of damage, knocking his endurance down to 2. So, it's his turn to attack, and on the combat goes until either one of you is killed or one of you escapes. I'll talk about that in a sec. Now, once you defeat your opponents, you might get to collect treasure. Each enemy has a treasure value associated with them. You look this up on a table, roll a 6-sider, and that tells you how much gold or items you get. Higher numbers, as expected, are better and will give you better items. If combat goes against you, or you're seriously outnumbered, see that ravenous pack of wolves, you can try to escape instead of attacking. You roll a single 6-sider, and a result of 4, 5, or 6 means you get away and can move to a random neighboring space. Otherwise, your opponent gets another shot at you, and you can try again to escape in the next combat turn. As I was writing up the summary, I also noticed that you can also try to rout your opponents. After killing one opponent, you can try to roll a 6, and if you succeed, the rest of the enemies will run away. So, going back to the ravenous pack of wolves again, if you attack one of the wolves and kill them, you can try and roll that 6, and if you succeed, you'll just chase all the wolves away as if they were puppies. Now, obviously, you're going to take damage from combat. Again, sea wolves. And to heal from that, you can use your daily action to rest instead of traveling. Now, you need to first roll for an encounter in your current space. And if none involving combat or movement occurs, then you can regain 1 endurance point. Otherwise, if that event does involve combat or movement, then you must deal with the results of the encounter and try to rest the next day. So those are the two main actions that you can do, travel and rest. Now, at the end of the day, no matter what you do, no matter what action you do, you must eat and feed your party members and their mounts. And in certain terrain, you can hunt for food, and the mounts can graze. But in cities, you must either provide the food you carry with you or purchase it with gold. If you can't, your followers will starve and may desert you. In cities, you must also provide lodging for your parties and their mounts. Otherwise, again, they may leave. Now, I did only cover two of the actions, but basically for the rest of them, like seeking audiences or searching ruins, you just roll two dice and look up the result in a table. And that will sometimes lead you to another table, but most of the time it'll send you to a particular event, which you resolve, like the encounter events. So what I've described is pretty much the core of the game. I've left out some bits, like transporting items and things like that, but otherwise, that's about it. The rest of the game is contained within the tables in the event descriptions. So to give kind of a sense of how this flows, let me summarize my last game. The ones before that were a little abrupt, which, as I said before, I kind of died a lot. So I started off in the village of Ogan, and one of the things you need to deal with in the first part of the game, you have to cross a river, and while you're on the northern side of that river, you have to evade soldiers who are chasing you from the enemies that have taken over your kingdom. So I did that, and then I got across the river and went south. I headed south for a while and then searched some ruins. In the ruins, I discovered a monster, which I successfully evaded. And then I thought, well, there's usually some good stuff in the ruins. It looks like you can collect magic items and things like that. So I decided I would search again and ended up with a bunch of skeletons. I managed to kill a few of them, realized I was in trouble, and escaped. So I escaped out of there, left that ruins, thinking, all right, well, obviously I'm not strong enough to deal with that, and rested and hunted and got food. And then I met some mercenaries, and I died. Then I said, well, all right, I'm going to pretend that didn't happen, because I actually wanted to get a little further in the game for this podcast. So I ignored that part. And the encounter instead became, I met a hobbit. I thought, oh, look, fat hobbit. Me, I can try to kill him and take his money, and maybe I'd actually have some gold to do something with in the game. But unfortunately, he escaped. Hey, I'm a rogue. I'm on the road. I need money. After that, I hung out on the road a little bit longer, and I met two elves, and I managed to kill them. And I got 22 gold. So, oh, right. Finally, I'm in the money. I can finally start doing stuff, go to town, start buying items, things like that. So I went to the next town, which is called Anglais, and there I met a mercenary. And the mercenary said, well, you look like a wealthy guy. I'm going to join your group just as long as you pay me. I thought, great. I'm doing great. I've got 22 gold. I've got, well, actually I had less than that because I had to start paying the mercenary, you know, buying food for the mercenary. So I've got the gold. I've got a follower. I should be able to take on anything. I move to the next space. We are caught by goblins and taken to a goblin city. They take all of our gold, take all of our possessions, and the only thing I can do is to roll to try to escape. I manage to escape. The mercenary does not, and I'm back to where I was. No gold, no follower, and wandering around the countryside. So I thought, all right, I'll just start moving east towards this castle. It's the Huldra Castle. I thought, all right, maybe I can go there and meet the rulers there and try and beg for some sort of favors or something. And I met a monk on the road. I thought, great, he joins my party. I've got the monk. All right, I'm starting to get back into this. I've got a follower again. We can try and get some gold. And the next encounter, we ran into a large number of baddies. It was right outside the castle, and they wiped us out. At which point I said, all right, I've played the game enough. I think I get a good sense of it. But just for the fun of it, I thought, what would have happened if I hadn't met the bad guys? So I went. I spent one day there waiting on the king and queen, who ignored me. And the second day, they gave me a ton of gold. If it wasn't for that encounter, I would have been back on Easy Street again. Oh well. I hope that gives you some sense of how the game can flow. And it's a little story right there. So, what works and what doesn't? I have to admit it that initially I was kind of skeptical about this game. As I mentioned in the Top Secret podcast, I'm not a big fan of table-driven games, and this one definitely qualifies as a table-driven game. However, it does seem to be a necessary evil, and most of the time the table lookups are quite quick. As I mentioned below, I would recommend printing out the most commonly used tables separately from the rules, just so you can have them easily on hand. Now, there is some flipping back and forth through the books, or in my case, I used PDF files, which is a bit annoying, but it's not too bad. However, my main problem in the game, such as it is its randomness. Any sort of grand strategy you can come up with can easily be destroyed by random events. So one example of this is escaping. In the D20 system, you can break out of combat pretty much any time. The penalty for doing so is one attack of opportunity. Now, yeah, that could kill you, but they're only going to hit you once, and you can get away. In this game, if you get attacked by a large gang and can't get away because of a couple of bad rolls, you're just dead. I mean, you've got a 50-50 chance. You'd think that would be good enough, but there were a number of times when I just rolled poorly again and again and again, going up against 7 enemies, and they just wiped me out. In my opinion, this is just not fun. Another example of this is the situation I ran into outside of Anglais. As I said, there I was. I finally had gold. I had a strong follower. I thought I was set to make some progress. But we take one step out of town, we get captured by goblins, lose everything, and nearly die. And all of that was because of bad luck. It wasn't because of any sort of strategy. There wasn't a goblin city sitting there on the map that I just went to. It just suddenly appeared. I had to roll to get that encounter in the space. I had to roll that particular encounter. And then I had to roll poorly when trying to escape from the encounter. If we'd managed to escape, we wouldn't have run into all that trouble. Now, while setbacks are to be expected, I mean, I would be disappointed if the game were too easy. That sort of hammer of the gods coming down feels a little too extreme to me. And one final quibble, which has nothing to do with randomness. I do wish there were a better way of managing the enemies and the followers. The recommendation is to use paper and pencil notes. That felt a little clumsy, even though I do have to admit it was pretty much necessary. I realize it sounds like I'm just dumping on the game. The truth is, with all of that, I actually enjoyed it. I mean, with all the trials and tribulations, you do end up with a neat little story of the poor little barbarian prince. Or, at least in my case. I mean, if you succeed, then you're the successful, rich barbarian prince. And I can see myself playing it a few more times, if only just to try to beat it at least once. So, in summary, Barbarian Prince isn't so much a game as it is a way of passing time. In the short term, it's certainly an entertaining way to pass time, but in the long run, I'm not really sure it would be fulfilling. I'd definitely recommend it to RPG players who want to get some dice action in without getting friends together or cranking up the computer. It's free, after all, and doesn't take much time to set up. But if you're a wargamer and you're looking for some good solitaire wargame action with a lot of strategic thinking, I would pass this one by. I think the lack of control would just frustrate you. If those comments haven't driven you away from the game, I do have some recommendations on how to play it. First of all, you can ignore any errata sheets you might see. They're already incorporated into the Dwarf Star download. As far as setup, at the minimum, you'll need to print out the map, obviously, the travel table, and a character tracker, which is provided. The map itself will fit on 2 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper if you scale it down a bit, and I'm not sure, it might fit on A4 paper without scaling. It's worth a try. I'd also suggest printing or writing out the combat table, as you'll be using it a lot. If you want to save trees, you can do what I did, and just leave the rules and events on the computer. This worked just fine for me. I just sat there in front of my computer, had the whole thing laid out in front of me, and just kind of went through it. Obviously, if we want to play on the kitchen table, you'd need a laptop. In addition to all of that, you'll need 2 six-siders, a pawn or a figure. I just used a lead figure of Brian from the Knights of the Dinner Table. Some markers for the character tracker. I found that pennies were a good size. And a sheet of paper and a pencil to take notes. And then you'll be set to go. If all that seems to be too much trouble, I do say that this is a game that's crying out for computer adaptation. Say, on Vassal or something similar. If I could run a quick little adventure in this while wasting time at work, waiting for a compile to finish, that would be fun. As I said, it's not a bad way to pass time, and if that time were streamlined, it could be much better. That'll wrap up this discussion of Barbarian Prince. I'll be back with some feedback and final thoughts right after this.
Hi there, friend. Welcome to the Dragon's Landing Inn. Come in from the cold and warm yourself by the fire.
Wow, thanks a lot. It's downright cold out there.
If you're looking for something to eat, we've got a feast of ideas and advice for tabletop RPG players over there.
Uh-huh.
And in the back room, we have interviews with gaming industry insiders.
Right.
And out here in the common room, we have lots of good, hearty discussion about all kinds of RPGs and accessories. So, what can I get for you?
One podcast later.
Little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm. No little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm.
Visit the Dragon's Landing podcast at www.dragonslanding.com.
I got quite a bit of feedback from my question about reviewing rare games. Jimmy Anderson, you remember him from the beginning, wrote me to say, I don't have a preference on your format, easy to find versus hard to find, as I'll listen anyway. But I'll admit that the information won't be as relevant to me if it's hard to find or expensive stuff. And on the side, I had 5 comments. Charlie Eastman wrote, in response to your inquiry about out-of-print expensive, hard-to-find games versus cheap and available, I'll take cheap and available every time. Rob Ritchie wrote, I know it's a bit of a cop-out, but I think you should continue to follow your instincts, which have been very good up to now. Follow the games that interest you, without regard to their price tag. Mark Ballinger added to that, I'm hardly going to go download an old Mac platformer, but I still enjoyed the show. Your show on Cosmic Encounter was welcome too, even though getting a set is a challenge. Donald Shoemaker threw in, for my 2 cents, I'll say do vintage games regardless of availability. I listen to your podcast because I like the esoteric aspect of vintage games I used to play when I was younger. I'd hate to see it become Hasborged. Finally, Terry Rain wrote, it really doesn't matter. If an older game is available, then all the better, and I will look for it if your description intrigues me. If it is not readily available, I would still be interested in hearing about it just to know what was unique about it. Based on all that, I think I'll just keep doing what I've been doing. As I said in the Top Secret podcast when I first brought this up, part of my philosophy is in general making sure that there's some reasonably cheap version of the game out there, even if it's in computer form for a board game, a PDF for a role-playing game, or an emulator for a computer game. But occasionally, I will cover something that costs a few pennies more, and from the feedback, it sounds like it'll be okay. If you have feedback for the Vintage Gamer, you can leave me comments on the website, which is www.thevintagegamer.net, or you can contact me directly via email at vintagejim@gmail.com or via Skype. My username is JV Square. Feedback is always welcome. And so I will close here by wishing my Jewish listeners a happy Passover, my Christian listeners a happy Easter, and the rest of you a happy spring. And thus concludes yet another dusty episode of The Vintage Gamer. Our theme is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. Your humble host is Jim Van Verth. The next episode of The Vintage Gamer will feature the horror and hunt game The Fury of Dracula and its recent re-release entitled just Fury of Dracula. Until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening.